Welcome to episode 137 with Shane Foss.
I love the podcast. I think there's a lot of really great information, and it's very, you know, targeted to compliance and surplus line insurance, and I'm learning new things and listening to voices of people that I know, which is, I think it's very cool.
Welcome to Spot On Insurance. Join us each week as we speak to insurance professionals, attorneys, regulators, and compliance specialists on topics ranging from improving your agency to staying on the right side of the law. Subscribe and stay informed on the effects of new trends and disruptive emerging technologies on your businesses and your industry.
Hi, this is Ted.
This is Arlene.
Today's Spot On Insurance guest has 20 years under his belt as an executive in the medical industry. In his professional career, he has negotiated complex multi-million dollar contracts, worked in medical device marketing, created business strategies, and optimized the P&L for companies. He holds an MBA from Rice University's Jones School of Business, a BS from the University of the Incarnate Word, and a surgical technologist certificate from the United States Air Force. Several years ago, he became frustrated with the current healthcare options for Americans and decided to do something about it. Can't wait to hear all about this. A very warm welcome to Hooray Health's CEO, Shane Foss. Welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
We surprise people with that welcome, don't we?
So glad to have you here, Shane. So it sounds like you're like a through and through Texas man, huh? Went to Rice.
Well, you know, I've lived here most of my professional life, or I should say adult life, but I grew up in northern Minnesota, believe it or not.
Oh, okay.
Northern Minnesota. We know Minnesota well, too.
Yeah, we have our legal team is there.
Oh, so I can talk the talk, right? Oh, no, you betcha.
Oh, yeah. Now you sound like a Minnesotan. Yes. Unfortunately, we've had the mispleasure, I would say, of having to go to Minnesota only in January when it's like, oh, my God, bitter, bitter cold. And you're so grateful for all of those underground systems, you know, going through from building to building, like through the Wells Fargo.
The skyways. Yeah, the skyways or the sky walkways. There you go.
Yeah.
They're very nice. I was up there this year unfortunately, for a funeral, and it was minus 35 when I was at my parents' house in Duluth.
Oh, my goodness.
As they say, holy moly.
Jeez, that's cold. Minus 35. That's crazy. That's crazy. Yep.
That's why I live in Texas.
Yeah. Yes. That's one of the reasons why we moved from New York to Texas.
Now we're in Puerto Rico. Yeah.
Staying warm. Trying to stay warm.
Yes. Exactly. And you keep going farther south to get warmer.
As you get older.
It's all right. The earth keeps warming up. We don't have to go much further south. We'd probably be nice and warm in Alaska soon.
This keeps up.
Right.
It's not good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so, exactly. So Shane, take us through your life. Tell me how you ended up doing all these fabulous things that you've done in your life. You know, you went to Rice University, Jones School of Business. You've got a surgical technologist certificate, which you're going to have to explain to me. But, you know, what were you thinking growing up? What did you want to be? What did you do?
You know, it's all a mistake, honestly. I mean, it's all by chance. It was, you know, when I grew up, I thought I wanted to be an architect. I loved construction. Yeah, I loved architecture. And, but you know, I was the first one in my family to go to college, and when I got to college, I didn't know what I really wanted to do in the sense of, you know, I got there and I thought, oh my gosh, how do I even get an architecture degree? And so I honestly floundered and, didn't do well in school. And I said, you know what, I am not going to sit here the rest of my life and, you know, try to figure it out. So I went. Talked to a recruiter, happened to talk to a Air Force recruiter, and I signed up and I went home and I told my parents, I just signed up for the Air Force. And I thought my mom was going to absolutely have a heart attack. Oh. And when I was, talking to the recruiter, he said, what do you like to do? And I said, you know, honestly, I'm pretty open. I don't really know what I like to do. I like to sell. I was working at a sporting goods store at the time. And, I knew I liked that, but other than that, that doesn't really translate into the military. And he said, you know what, what do you think of being a surgical technologist? And I said, what's that?
That's what I said.
You assist surgeons in surgery. And I said, that sounds incredible.
Wow.
So, that was my start. I went into the military and, you know, I went from really not doing well in school to really excelling. I figured out really what my passion was. I loved medicine. I loved the operating room. And so, for the next 4 years, I was in, the Air Force, and I was at their largest, hospital, which is called, Wilford Hall. It's in San Antonio, and it was Level 1 trauma center. And I worked, 16-hour shift, you know, Friday night, Saturday night, 8-hour shift, Sunday night. And then, I actually went to college full time during the week, and I got my degree right after I got out. And you know, I met my wife in college. She graduated a year before me. We got married, had our first child. She had been accepted to medical school. So I was trying to figure out, well, I knew all these medical device reps and I knew I could sell. So they gave me a chance and I went with, to work with Johnson & Johnson in Houston, where my wife went to medical school, and the rest is history.
That's an amazing story, Shane, because, you know, you knew that you liked sales, and then all of a sudden here you are in front of this Air Force recruiter and he just asks you, how about, you know, medicine? And you said, sure, why not surgery? And it seems like just such a different skill set, and yet it ended up being such a perfect blend, right? Like, you know, that you started doing assisting surgeons and you were able to use your skill of sales in your life.
Yeah, that's why I said about, you know, about you and your son having that, you know, gift of gab, or that, you know, that that ability to talk to people. I think that having that ability is such a strength, and it translates into so many roles. And I really got along well with the surgeons, the OR staff. I'm a learner at heart. I love to learn, so I really embrace that. And so then when I got to work for Johnson & Johnson, and orthopedic medical device sales, I really excelled and did well, got along with the orthopedic surgeons, because, you know, I'd been in the operating room already at that point for 5 years. So I knew the procedures already. I knew, you know, when there was trouble, I loved orthopedics. And, I really, my focus was, joint replacements. So total knees and total hips, really specialize in revisions. And so I did really well there for 5 years. And then Stryker recruited me to get into sales management. And Stryker was just really eye-opening. It was really the place where I think that I developed as a leader and as a salesperson. They were just a fantastic organization to work for. And I grew, and they paid for my MBA at Rice. And so, you know, it was just a great learning experience for me. And so, I did really well at Stryker, was there for 10 years. And then, I left and, started really kind of trying to round out my experience. And, I worked with a private equity group in one of their portfolio companies, where we were, basically it was a contract manufacturing. So we would build the instruments and the implants and the instrument trays that these medical device companies used in surgery. So I knew a lot about the procedures, but I didn't know about the manufacturing. So that was a really good experience. And then I had the opportunity to buy my own business, a medical device distributorship, where I thought I'd spend the rest of my life, honestly, but there's other plans, and we turned that business around in 3 years and sold it. And then, basically I ended up in the insurance industry by, one of my best friends from Stryker. He took over as CEO of a company called Employer Direct. It was venture backed, and they were struggling a little bit, and, he had just taken over. And so he hired me as a COO, and I just fell in love with the space. And we basically, what we had done was we created surgical bundles, or access to surgical bundles, for large self-funded employers, you know, Phillips 66 and AT&T and these enormous self-funded organizations. And we really, the paradigm in health insurance, or health care really, is that there's no correlation between cost and quality. Mm-hmm. And so we really challenged that by creating this bundled surgery network. And what we did was we looked at it completely different. We, you know, we knew that healthcare was local and we wanted to make sure that everybody could participate and not have to travel to, you know, Seattle or Chicago or Rochester, Minnesota or Cleveland to get surgery. They could have it in their backyard. And so we've spent a lot of time building this quality algorithm and really selecting our surgeons. And so we really did a great job in that. We really kind of turned that that space around. And within 11 months, we had sold the majority ownership to a local company here and an investment company in Dallas. And I stayed on 6 months. And then that's when I had the idea for Hooray Health.
So can you share with us, what was your vision for creating Hooray Health? Was there some frustration that you felt with the current system? What was it that drove you to that point to starting this?
Absolute frustration. I think that, so what had happened was I was consulting like a lot of people do in between jobs. And and I was probably sitting at a desk, poor posture and, you know, not eating right. And among other things, right. And my back went out and I'd never had such excruciating pain before. And so I went into an urgent care and I had a $75 copay with my insurance company and I had not met my $6,000 deductible. So I asked them, hey, what's the global fee for this visit? And they said, oh, it's $150. So I said, can I just pay the $150 total? And they said, yeah, that's fine. So I paid it because I knew I hadn't hit my deductible. Right. So they took an X-ray of my neck. They thought they saw a little bone spur that was probably irritating my nerve root and I think it was C4, C5. And so they gave me two injections. They gave me an anti-inflammatory and then they gave me a muscle relaxer and sent me on my way. Well, besides neither of them working, by the way, the other problem was 3 weeks later, I got a balance bill for $800. So I called them up and I said, hey, I would just, you know, when I visited with you and got at the point of service, you said that, you know, this was the global fee. Well, why am I getting a balance bill? Well, you know, there's carve outs and, you know, yada, yada, yada. So you owe $800. And I said, no, I don't. So I negotiated it down.
Wow.
The problem was everybody knows that, you know, you have bill charges in our space. I should say everybody knows this, that there's bill charges, but they're literally at least, if not more, a tenth more than, you know, they expect to get a tenth of what they bill. Right. So I ended up paying them, I want to say $80 to $90 for those services. But realistically, I shouldn't have had to pay another penny. And so since Obamacare, you know, or ACA wasn't instituted, you know, the challenge is anything under $3,000 from a contractual standpoint, nobody really pays attention to that anymore. Right. And the providers know that. And there's, you know, you have good providers and bad providers. And so there are all these companies that take advantage of this, whether it's out of network or in this case, hey, look, you know, we'll contract with you, but we're going to have all these carve outs. Well, you know, you as the provider or as the consumer, just, you know, you have no idea what you're going to get billed. And so I started looking at these statistics. And so statistically, 52% of Americans would actually pay for that $800 bill. About 8% would do about what I did. And then the other 40%, what they're going to do is they're going to let it go to collections. And so that's what really focused me on finding a solution, because, you know, 1 in 5 Americans are sent to collections every year for an unpaid medical bill. That's less than $600.
Wow. Oh.
And the challenge with that is they're getting sent to collections for a bill that really the provider is expecting, you know, $60 on. So what I did was I started doing research, and I'm part owner in another company where it's a development company where we build medical office buildings and urgent cares. And so I went to my partners there and asked them, hey, could you introduce me to these doctors that own these urgent cares so I could start building, you know, just really asking the question, hey, is there anybody doing this? Would you be willing to take fixed payments? And so we went through the whole process, and what I found was the providers are very reasonable. And we built a fair and equitable pricing strategy together. And so I just said, you know what, there's something here. So I went out and talked to a couple carriers, got the plan underwritten. And then I went out and built the network. And, you know, today we're the only provider network in the nation focused on a fixed indemnity product, and we have fixed pricing across the United States. It's a $25 copay, no balance bill. And so as a member, you only see the $25 copay. So if it's done under that roof, it's covered with the $25 copay. So it is a real, real important benefit when you're talking about somebody that's making $12 an hour. They can't afford that $600 or $500 bill that they're going to get outside of their plan, or, you know, not having any insurance.
So the other thing that that, you know, that's so fascinating, you know, what you've developed, and pricing is great. But one thing that we found is when you go to, you have a medical procedure, you go to a doctor's visit, or you go to have some tests, they actually have like different rates if you have insurance versus if you don't have insurance. So they'll tell you, hey, if you just pay for it, you know, yourself, it's like 1/5 the price. And, you know, we've had so many people, you know, in our office that have been like, this is just crazy that, you know, we're actually being penalized because we have insurance.
Exactly. It's the system is broken. And then if you go someplace where they actually accept cash and they have a cash price, that's wonderful. Right. The problem is most places still don't really have a cash price. And, you know, I think that, you know, if you go to a hospital, for instance, and you tell them a cash price, you're, you know, their head's going to explode. It's interesting. The way I look at it is, why can't we have a system very similar to how your auto or your homeowner's insurance is, right? So talking about roofing companies, I have USAA as our carrier. Our roof goes out, they come in and say, your roof is worth $45,000. You have a $5,000 deductible. Here's a check for $40,000. Figure it out. Mm-hmm. Why shouldn't we do that in the health insurance world, right? And the reason is there's not a consistent marketplace for cash right now. And I say right now, I think it'll come in the next, you know, within the next 5 years.
Within the next 5 years. Okay. So Shane, can you share with us, like, what are some of the companies that you are currently working with?
Sure. Some, you know, today we're working with smaller companies. Some of the, you know, we work with Siemens Fossil. We work with Slater's 5050, Sylvester Cockrum, you know, Brentwood Dental, Samaric Financial Services. We have a large McDonald's franchise down in Houston that we work with. We're really across the board, just really smaller franchise businesses. We have, this year though, we're really breaking into the larger part-time contingent workforce this year. And so we can't say the names now, but we have, 4 or 5 very large, you know, 10,000 plus employer groups that are coming on this for this January and February. That'll, really kind of bring us to the forefront with that large, part-time contingent workforce, which is, you know, really where we like to play.
So let's say, you know, you're doing a presentation in front of an employer, you know, let's say 200 employees, whatever, and, you know, they're going to have a diverse demographic in terms of health concerns as well as age. And let's say, you know, a good portion of their employees are young and healthy, and, you know, these are the ones that are usually just starting a family, and they can't afford to pay for healthcare. And a lot of times they're really not concerned about healthcare because they're healthy. So what's your message with this type of employee?
Yeah, so the message is you need to have at least some basic coverage to take you to make sure that you're not set behind financially. And if you look at the bulk under the age of 45, if you look at the bulk of medical claims, you're looking at accident related issues, right? Accident-related costs. And so our plan, you know, it starts at $99. We take care of, you know, your annual wellness. We take care of your, you get up to 5 annual visits with per member with the urgent care retail clinics with the $25 copay. But then each member gets a $5,000 expense incurred accident policy. So that takes care of broken bones. That takes care of twisted knees. That takes care of stitches, right? Because what happens is, 57% of Americans have less than $1,000 in their bank account. Mm-hmm. So, and that's this young population, right? They're living paycheck to paycheck. They've had, you know, they are struggling financially, right? To save anything. Yep. So, you know, for us, we can get an employer to pay 75% of that $99 for them. Now, you know, you've got a small responsibility, but you need to have it because real life means you're responsible for the medical bills on, you know, even if you were dehydrated, right? Average dehydration, you going into an urgent care, it's going to run you $500-$600. Well, guess what? They don't have $500-$600, but with us, it's a $25 copay. Those are the important conversations to have with them, just to say, look, your kids are going to get sick. You're going to get sick. You want to be able to at least take them in there and be protected against the balance bill. And the other thing is, you don't even, you know, if they have a sinus infection, you can call in on at no cost with our telemedicine provider. So, you know, it's a very pragmatic view of health insurance, right? If you end up with cancer, if you end up in a large car accident, you know, you're going to end up at Parkland. But I always tell everybody, we don't compete against health insurance. We compete against not having health insurance. Right. And if you look at statistically what's happened over the last year, especially in Texas, we went from 17% uninsured to 22% in 1 year. And that's going to continue to grow.
Wow, that's incredible.
Spot On is sponsored by Insurance Licensing Services of America. Need help with corporate name changes, annual returns, or surplus lines tax filings? Feeling overwhelmed? If you're looking for experts in regulatory compliance, you've come to the right place. ILSA provides the industry with over 50 services. To learn more about the company and how they can help, visit ilsainc.com.
Join us Thursday for our next episode of Compliance Do's and Don'ts, when ILSA's licensing supervisor, Stephanie Cantu, shares her do's and don'ts for license renewals. Her secret, be proactive. States usually open the window for renewals 45 to 60 days before the license expiration date. Take advantage of that time. And if you only learn one thing from this podcast, let it be this. If you do miss the renewal window, don't write business on the lapsed license. Take care of the renewal first.
It's definitely never that easy. So always keep that in mind. And then, of course, I would say this is one of the most important parts of the puzzle is if you do happen to reinstate or reapply for your license because something came up, you couldn't do it on time, et cetera, don't continue to write business. We have clients that they either don't think about that or, you know, it's just something that they're like, oh, well, you know, once I late renew it, it'll be okay. It won't look like I didn't have a license. Well, some states, they do. They'll give you a new issue date, a new start date. So say your renewal was due July 31st. You don't process it until August 18th. Well, yeah, exactly.
You're writing business without a license.
Yes. And we have to explain that to some people because they're like, well, I just renewed my license one day late. You know, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is for that one day, you were writing business without a license. So,
Which means what kind of problems?
Oh, gosh, a whole new can of worms has opened up, starting with sanctions. You know,
Don't miss Stephanie Cantu's Do's and Don'ts for License Renewals Thursday on Compliance Do's and Don'ts.
On our next episode of Spot On Insurance, we'll welcome two members of TensorFlight. TensorFlight is an insurtech that provides detailed, accurate, and near-instant commercial property data. Their engine is based on machine learning, AI, computer vision analysis, and multiple image types in order to build a database of all buildings around the world.
I want to go back, Jacob, to a little bit about the features that your imagery gathers for you. Like, you know, like if an insurance company is using your property data, what are some of the specific features that it captures in regards to buildings, let's say?
Yes. Yeah, so now, we get two offers. The first offer, it's automated offer. So the data is fully automated. There is no human verification of that data. So it means mm-hmm. you can get the data via API. You can connect our engine with your systems. and get pre-filled quotes, which means like complete automation of underwriting. This is what we want to achieve in the SME sector, as you need a bit less data for small and medium commercial properties. And these are these are like basic parameters that you need for underwriting. So construction type, one of the most important ones, is fully automated right now. So you can learn about the basic classes of the construction.
Come join us Tuesday as we discuss TensorFlight and how they're making it easier to get data from any building in the world and what this means for the insurance industry. Next week, episode 138, and of course, your favorite podcast, Spot on Insurance.
So do you see a future with a single-payer system where people actually obtain the plan that they want?
It's hard. You know, we're going to have to come to grips with paying 50, 60% tax, right? Income tax to do something like that. I think that what you'll see before that is you would see more of a, you know, with Medicare, you've got Medicare Advantage, right? Where they privatize it. You know, you hear Bernie Sanders saying, look, we'll just kill all the insurance companies. You know, I think where he loses credibility on that is, you know, the reality is the insurance industry employs, you know, what, 30 million people, 40 million people, right? You're not just going to, you know, it's just not responsible to do that. I think the other part of it is, you know, financially, you know, look at Medicare. Medicare, we outsourced to private companies with Medicare Advantage, and that plan has been working really well. So I think that you're going to see some combination of that maybe in the next 10 years. But, you know, it's hard to say. I think that the reality is the money's not there. Something, you know, you're going to see hopefully a lot more innovation like us and where, you know, we're offering plans that are affordable, that actually pay for services. And, you know, you see that proliferation of medical cost sharing out there. You know, they're 1/10 the cost of a major medical. And but it's not insurance. So I think there's, you know, you see some innovators out there and, you know, we're really at a tipping point right now where people truly can't afford health insurance, even if you're making $100,000 a year plus, especially mm-hmm. if you're self-employed.
Right. There's a market.
Yeah. So people are really open right now to alternatives. And our mission statement is we're a company dedicated to providing affordable alternatives or supplements to high deductible health plans. So we're focused in this area and as a solution to, you know, to people that just, you know, they can't afford the $2,500 family premium where you've got a $6,000 individual and then you got $15,000 family deductible. I mean, it's just not sustainable.
So tell us who your typical client is, because it's then not really a large corporation that is paying for their employees' healthcare benefits. So what does the users of Hooray Health look like typically?
Well, so really we're a chameleon. We fit in a lot of different areas. So we really focus on a couple of areas. One is the small group. So, you know, whether it's 100 or maybe 200 or less, where you have a large hourly population.
Okay.
Not a lot of high participation. So we're really a good fit there because we can be used as with a MEC, a minimum essential coverage plan, to cover that Part A penalty. We're usually a good solution there. We can, if you're under 50, we're a great fit there, really as a core benefit. And then we're a supplement in larger corporations that have a high deductible health plan. So we're getting implemented this year or for 2020 with a couple large corporations as a supplement where it's truly a supplement to their high deductible health plan. We're not a gap, we're a non-coordinating benefit, but we're HSA eligible. But what's nice about it is we take care of the basic coverage for that family, right? You know, my daughter, she's already been to the urgent care 3 times this year. We're halfway through the year, right? My son's been twice.
Oh, you know, my goodness.
I've been once. And so, but what's nice is it's $25 each time. And right. So when you look at, if I have a $6,000 deductible, well, geez, you know, I mean, I'm paying cash price for all of this, right? So it's easy for us to be offered as a supplement. And then the other large group opportunity where we're seeing a lot of interest is that large part-time contingent workforce that does not have benefits offered today. They just do not. You know, we were working with one of the larger corporations about a month ago. I presented, they have 197,000 part-time employees. They do not offer any benefits for those. Mm-hmm. So that's a great fit for us.
Okay. Oh, it could be a lot of people that are like part of this whole gig economy, right? That they're working for, you know, they're Ubering, they're doing Lyft, they're working for Fiverr. So, and I guess that those are like self-employed, but you know,
the gig is a combination though.
Yeah. So they have, some of them have that side jobs. Hustle.
Those are side hustles. Yes.
But then again, maybe like the business is like a Walmart or something that they have a lot of people on their payroll that they just have on as a part-time basis. So they're not covering their healthcare.
Exactly. And so that gig economy, we have an individual policy today that we can sell to individuals, small business owners that, you know, are independent, the part of the gig economy, whether they're an Uber driver, Lyft driver. So we have an affordable alternative there. Now, you know, the challenge with the individual market is there's limited states, right? It's not all 50 states. And so there are some limitations to it. But, you know, when you look at where the bulk of the population is, most of those states accept us with our limited medical plan. So but it's a great alternative for those folks.
So out of the 50 states, how many are you in right now?
So when you look at it from a large group standpoint, 50 or over, we have 42 states that we can sell our product for a group. Small group, we're down to 38. And then when you look at it from an individual, we're in 14 today. We'll probably end up around 27. We're working through those right now, all the filings.
Can you explain a little bit? You mentioned a little bit ago something about non-coordinating management. So I guess, you know, you have your system and then on top of that, you have your, let's say your employer's healthcare plan where you have a $6,000 deductible. So can you talk a little bit about that, about the non-coordinating gap there?
Yeah, sure. So the coordination comes if you're a gap plan, then you coordinate with the deductible. Mm-hmm. With us, we're a non-coordinating benefit, so exempt. And so we do not coordinate. So the employee would go utilize our services and then they would just pay the $25 copay, and that payment does not go towards the deductible. Or if, let's say they had an accident, let's say they broke their ankle, mm-hmm. they incur costs. We write them a check up to, let's say, $5,000, and then they would have that $1,000 gap for their insurance. But they would go through their insurance and then we would just reimburse them $5,000 and they would have that $1,000 gap. So in other words, we're not coordinating with, you know, the carrier, their high deductible health plan carrier for that deductible. It would just be something that they would file with us and then we would reimburse and then they could put that towards a deductible.
Talk to us a little bit more about, you know, business owners, how they could have more incentives for their employees to take on a plan like Hooray Healthcare.
Well, when you look at the labor market today, it's the tightest labor market in the history of the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, everybody's fighting for talent today, all the way down to the hourly employee. And they are the key. If you look at the top 500 companies in America, you know, they think over the next 10 years that they project that they're going to have a 30% increase in the part-time contingent workforce. You know, they're looking, how do I engage and retain the current talent I have? Number one way is health benefits. They're focused on three things, which is, the first thing is, how do I engage and retain my current talent? And the number one way to do that is with health benefits. Statistically, if you're offering a part-time workforce employee health benefits, you have a 60% chance that they're going to stay 3 years or more, which is huge.
Yes.
Then you look at turnover costs. So turnover costs, SHRM says that turnover costs for an $8 an hour employee is $3,500. And I will tell you, not one business owner has ever told me that that number is too low or too high. Mm-hmm. That everybody says it's the exact opposite. It's probably a little low. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge expense for them. The employer that we just talked to today, we presented, he has 130% turnover. Mm. He's trying to figure out, how do I get those people engaged? And so he's looking at raising the prices. But, you know, what we talked to him about was, okay, well, let's look at retention, but also let's look at how do we recruit new employees and the right employees. And so by offering our health benefit and paying 50% of it, now you have a real benefit, right? So now going from $8 an hour to $11.50, which is what this group was doing, now they add on, you know, paying $50 of the $99 for the health insurance. It's a whole other, you know, it's a whole other ball game for them. And that's what they're worried about today. So the small business owners, they're not stupid. They're smart. They're trying to figure out, how do we get our employees engaged? How do I retain them? And then how do I recruit new ones that are going to stay? And so health benefits are definitely on their mind. They're not privy to what's on, you know, what's available in the market today, because what's been shown is all of the, you know, the large carrier plans that are $600-$700 for an employee only.
Employee retention is crucial, right? We know that the value of an employee just goes up the longer amount of time that they're with an employer. Wherein you're looking at, okay, you have a work population, employees that might be at a higher rate. Yeah, you lose those employees. Yes, you're bringing in employees probably that are making less per hour, but they're still not as valuable because they don't have that experience, that knowledge of that business. Yeah, so employee retention is just so crucial for business owners.
Yeah, 100%. Yep, 100%. And so they're looking for solutions right now, and they're open. And, you know, one of our focuses when we talk to especially small business owners, but even these large corporations, they don't have the HR support, period, if they're a small business, or they don't have enough HR support in these large businesses really to think outside the box a lot of times or implement new strategies. So we make it really easy. Internally, we have our own marketing team. We have copywriters. We have graphic designers. We have digital marketing people in-house. And then we can actually set up the enrollment off-cycle for them so we don't confuse part-time and full-time. And we can really work with them on the messaging. And then we're able to set up from an enrollment standpoint, you know, really, we can send a text that says, hey, welcome to company X. As a valued employee, you have access to benefits. Just click this link. And then on their phone, they can literally walk through, enroll in the benefits, and they're done. And so by simplifying that process for them, it takes a lot of the burden off them, but it also takes that barrier to entry for us or our brokers.
Let's dive a little bit deeper into that, what that looks like. You said you have separate enrollment times for full-time versus part-time employees. And then how are you getting that data from the employers? How are they feeding that information? Hey, we have, you know, five new hires this week.
So we can set up separate from part-time and full-time. We don't have to.
Okay.
So that's one. You know, so we don't have to follow traditional enrollment cycles. The other part is on the back end, we're set up with the employer where we have eligibility going back and forth electronically through EDI, and we'll get the adds and deletes, and it's a pretty simple process.
Okay, and so you said is there an app that they can actually go into and fill out their information? And
it's actually not an app. It's web enabled.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a web enabled enrollment system. So it's very nice. It's very intuitive. It's branded for the employer. And if you look, you know, the majority, I can't remember this exact statistic, but very few emails get opened. Everything gets overlooked.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
it's 100% of your texts get read within, I think, 4 hours. I think it's like 99% get read within the first 5 minutes. So
that's me.
Yeah, we're on top of that. We know those statistics, and we're responsible for the destruction of the email on the other side. But my concern is that soon everybody will jump on that bandwagon, and then all of a sudden you're sick and tired of receiving those text messages.
Yeah.
And I mean, we just evolved, right? Like, I mean, before it was, of course, emails came in and it's like, ooh, you got mail, and you know, you would go and check mail. We're definitely have gotten away from that. Now I'm to the point where I have my phone on silent all the time, like almost just about 24/7, because I don't want my phone to ring, because 99% of the phone calls I get are just a company, you know, looking to raise funds, you know, and asking me for money. So right. I rarely get legitimate phone calls, but text, you know, that I look at, it's people that know me, or it's a bank alert, different people that contractors and whatnot. But I mean, text definitely is the way to go right now.
Yeah, most definitely.
Are you getting the word out through any conferences?
Are you going to be attending any upcoming conferences?
Yes. So I'll be at Southwest Benefits Conference coming up in October. We'll be at EBN in September in Las Vegas. So yeah, we try to go to most of the major conferences and meet with brokers and agents. We're starting to next year. We've got a strategy to start hitting more of the employer-based meetings, you know, the trade shows. Yeah, so we're working hard.
Okay. Now, with the rapidly developing technologies and you being involved with some of that, what opportunities are there that you see for the healthcare industry at this time from your perspective? What do we got in the future?
I think the ability to shop surgeons by quality, by price, by, you know, and I shouldn't say just surgeons, by medical procedures. I think what you will end up seeing is that by the pricing being so high today and really, I mean, really pricing themselves out of the market, I think you're going to see a much larger free market in healthcare, very similar to what you see with LASIK, right? With your eyes or with plastic surgery. And so I think that you'll see aggregators. I think you'll see technology platforms that are developed to get you to these people and to show the pricing. I think that's going to be the big opportunity moving forward.
So something like that, like you would see like technology like the Da Vinci robotics really, really driving prices down.
Well, I think... I don't, you know, Da Vinci, I don't think drives the price down. I think you
I
look
think
at,
because, so
yeah, I think when you look at the Da Vinci surgical system, I think what it does is it, where it drives costs down and where there's value is from a complication standpoint. And so as we get more and more of the systems out there, more and more of the surgeons trained, I think that the complication rates go down, but there's also other costs to that, right? So, you know, the machines cost $1 million. There's high disposable costs where we didn't see that before. So I think that they'll flush it out later on, what the true value is. And that's how the market dynamics normally work. I think you look at Stryker Orthopedics, they have the Mako knee robot, and now hip, where they can utilize three-dimension robot to prepare a total knee. And I think that you'll see a lot of the technology from a procedural standpoint. It's all incremental because that's just the way medicine is. But you'll see that incrementally improving and leading over to more outpatient joint replacement surgeries. And I think you'll see there the cost is really, it's from a complication standpoint where you really are able to lower the cost of healthcare is through reduced complications.
So you're talking about human error. You're talking about that the technology will reduce that human error and then lawsuits and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what's the number three killer in America? Medical related errors.
Yeah. Okay.
Holy smoke. Can you just say that one more time?
Yeah, number three killer in America, you know, behind cancer and cardiac is medical-related errors.
Holy smoke.
You know, you look at hospital metrics, right? You actually have a metric for a death percentage that they have to report for hospital acquired infections.
Well, I'm going to tell
you, scary.
Arlene was kind of a guinea pig, her and her sister, for the Da Vinci, and that Arlene used the Da Vinci machine her sister didn't for the same operation. And Arlene was up and around and doing everything in about, two weeks?
2 days,
She was walking around in 2 weeks. In 3 weeks, she was completely healed. And her sister was like 3 months and still going through.
And had a full-blown operation.
Full-blown operation. Yeah. The differences were really, really vast.
But, you know, when you spoke about, Shane, the knee replacement, I've also had knee replacement. I had an accident when I was a teenager.
She's actually the bionic one. Wow.
And so I have titanium in my left knee, and I still have my ACL torn in my right knee because once I had the first surgery, I was too scared to have the other one. But you know, that was a full surgery, you know, where they took, I think, tendon from one side.
So now she just hops around.
But I mean, that would be interesting to go in and have it all done by robotics, you know?
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool, actually. The thing is that it's less invasive.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. I think that a lot of people don't realize that. If I have to, you know, if there's a hysterectomy and it's done through an abdominal incision, your complication rate goes dramatically up. And I don't remember the exact statistics, but I want to say it's 12-14% complication rate versus if you do it laparoscopically, where you very similar to what you do with a Da Vinci, you just make little puncture holes and they do it laparoscopically. You're looking at less than, 2-3%. Complication rate, and you're up and running in 5 days as opposed to being out of work for 6 to 8 weeks.
That's the other thing. You're able to get back to work sooner, and
absolutely,
that's huge.
Talk to us about some advice for people entering the industry. I know that you've done sales, of course, so you're familiar with a lot of the sales books and how to get people motivated. So talk to our circle of professionals about motivation, about coming into the industry, how to prepare themselves.
Well, I think that the industry is great. I mean, I love this space. I think you have a direct impact on business owners, their bottom line, on employees' lives. I think anybody coming into this space, I think that you need to commit to learn and humble yourself to really listen and understand the market and stay engaged, participate in the meetings, stay engaged in your local associations and talk to people. I think that it's a great space to make a career. I think we don't have enough new people coming in. So I think that I tell everybody that I know that's coming out of college, my son's age, take a look at what we're doing. I think it's, I think there's a great opportunity moving forward in this space.
Yeah. So it's, what age is your son? Is he in high school, college?
He's 22, senior in college.
Oh, okay. I guess he's probably already done some internships, which is so crucial.
Yeah, he's been interning with us. So he's been doing marketing. So
our kids, our kids went through that.
I decided they didn't want. They wanted to do their own thing.
I don't know. It might not regulatory. As Tony put it in one of the other podcasts that we interviewed him, regulatory compliance just wasn't. Just didn't
surplus lines tax filers cut it.
Yeah, but really the insurance industry does have so many areas of tremendous interest. It just touches upon everything.
Well, even if we look at your team, at Hooray Healthcare, and we look at our team, right? Well, we have marketing folks. They're working on Instagram. Right. They're working on LinkedIn, on all of those things that, that's cool for them. And then they come into the insurance industry and get to be the trailblazers in our industry, right? That's so way behind with that type of thing.
Yep.
So it's very cool.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
Shane, tell me, how do people get in touch with you for more information?
You can find us at www.hooray healthcare.com, or you can call us at 866-7-HOORAY.
Okay.
Very, very good. Thank you so much, Shane, for joining
us.
Thank you
guys so much. It was great visiting with you. Great visiting with you. Great energy. Really impressed. really enjoyed it.
Visit spotoninsurance.com, where you'll discover an ever-growing library of podcasts, videos, articles, and online tools by professionals for professionals to enhance your insurance education. By the way, that's where you'll also find our podcast notes and bonus resources. Please don't forget to click the iTunes link to rate and review and let others know what you think of Spot On Insurance. Thank you for joining us, and we'll catch you next week.